So September is known to be the seasonally most bearish month of the year, and right on cue, market makers took the opportunity to drive the market down yesterday. So is it time to run away or is it time to buy the effing dip? Well, let's find out in this video. So how bearish is September? Well, as usual, let's take a look at the facts. And over here, you can see the S&P 500 seasonality chart that takes an average over the last 20 years. And you can see that September, the gain frequency is, 55%, which is lower than the average. As you guys know from my videos, that the market goes up 78% of the time on any given year. Okay, and every month has its own probability. And you can see, for example, February tends to gain 60% of the time, March 65%, April 80%, May 75%. So in comparison, months like August, September, and October are what we call the seasonally weaker months, because the chance of it making a gain is a lot lower. You can see the gain frequency is only 55% for August, September, and October. And from the chart, you can see the average over the last 20 years, September tends to start out weak and then rally strongly in the middle and then finish down. So from the start to the end, September tends to finish down an average of minus 0.7%. But then October would then usually end with a gain of 0.8%, and then November 2.3% gain, and December 0.6% gain. Of course, this is no guarantees, every year is different, so just take it with a pinch of salt. But the whole point is that, don't freak out, because the market can't go up every day, every week, every month, or even every year. You're going to have ups and downs. So this is the time we want to take advantage of the market by selling cash secured puts, selling put credit spreads when market dips and volatility increases. We can get very good premium selling those options and getting a lot of premium. At the same time, we use it to build our positions in high-quality companies. However, this year may be a bit different for two reasons. The first reason is because coming into September, we've actually had four gaining months in a row, which is not that common. So in May, we were up, June, we were up, July, we were up, and August, we were up. Now, how many times in history since 1950 has that happened? Four winning months in a row leading up to September. Well, it happened only 10 times, as you can see. 1958, 1980, 87, 03, 09, 2017, 2018, 2020, 2021, and 2024. Credit, of course, to Carson Research for putting together this table. And you can see that in all the 10 occurrences, was September up or down? Well, it was up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of 10 times, and it was down 4 out of 10 times. So in other words, the percentage chance of September being up after 4 winning months is slightly higher than the 55% average over 20 years. It is actually 60%, okay? And what happened during the rest of the year, which means from September to December, well, the market was up the rest of the year 70% of the time, and it was up 80% of the time for the next 12 months. And this is the average gain in September, 0.3%. When we had four winning months prior, it was up 3.8% for the rest of the year to December, and it was up 6.6% for the next 12 months. So generally, it is a bit more bullish than usual this year. So that's the first reason. The second reason is that the Federal Reserve looks like it's going to be cutting the short-term interest rates in the next meeting on 17th of September. During their Jackson Hole Symposium, the Fed Chair Powell, he said something that was quite pivotal, a big shift in their policy. So Powell said on the 26th of August, he said, the Fed has adopted a new framework that removes a reference to the central bank seeking inflation that averages 2% over time, and one to it making decisions on employment based on shortfalls from its maximum level. So this is a big change. If you recall in the past, every time the Fed chair spoke, he talked about, we have to bring inflation down to the 2% target. Until that happens, I'm not going to cut interest rates. But now, I guess after a lot of pressure from King Trump, now he's saying that, screw the 2%, we don't need 2%. And instead of being worried about inflation, now he's kind of like more worried about the employment situation because the employment data has been weaker than expected in the last couple of months. So in other words, he's hinting that there's a likelihood they're going to cut interest rates. Now, of course, there's no guarantee, but if we look at the probability based on the CME FedWatch tool, there's an 87.6% chance of the Fed cutting rates on the 17th of September. That's their next meeting. And 94% chance they will cut on the 29th of October, and a 99% chance they're going to cut on the 10th of December. So the market is now kind of like expecting 3 rate cuts by the end of the year. Now, bear in mind that the last time the Fed cut rates was December 2024. That was 8 months ago. So they have been holding rates for 8 months and then cutting again. So when was the last time the Fed kind of like paused rates for an extended period and then started cutting it? Well, it turns out it happened a few times. It happened in 1976, 1976, 1982, 86, 1990, 02, and 03. So 1976, it happened twice, once on 19 January and then 22nd of November. So these were the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. These were the 7 times when the Fed started cutting rates after pausing for 6 months or more. So what happened in the past when that happened? So what happened to the market was that it rallied very, very strongly after the first rate cut, after pausing for at least 6 months. The market rallied an average of 15%. So that's pretty bullish. Another reason why this could be an opportunity to buy the dip. Of course, if we get the right companies at the right buy points. Which brings me to, by the way, today's news. If you haven't already read, the judge in the antitrust case against Google has ruled that Google doesn't have to sell their Chrome business, they don't have to sell their Android business, and they can continue paying Apple $20 billion a year to be the default search engine on Apple phones. So now it looks like Google is rallying very strongly after hours. I think it's up like 5 or 6%, right? And that's why, if you guys remember, I posted a few videos on it when people were concerned, oh, what if Google breaks up? What if they lose the Chrome business? And I posted on social media, I said, relax. Number one, it's unlikely that it's going to happen, right? Because if you look at history from the Microsoft case to many other cases, the government likes to bark and bark and bark. At the end of the day, they've got no bite. They can't do anything to these huge companies with huge lobby interests, okay? And even if the judge did rule that Google had to sell Chrome, it doesn't really matter anyway, because you know, Google broken up will be worth more than Google not broken up. So either way, it's a win, right? But in this case, they don't have to sell Chrome. They don't have to sell Android. So once the market has no more concerns or overhangs, you know, the stock starts rallying, okay? And that's exactly what happened. So that's why I keep saying, guys, don't be concerned about all these, you know, macroeconomic or political news. Just focus on the business. And that's why, to me, the most important thing is what? When I invest in a business, the most important thing is that the business must have a strong economic moat. We call it a wide economic moat, ideally, that protects it from competition. As long as the company has got a wide economic moat, and it's a business where, you know, a lot of people have to use the product. Like, you know, a lot of people can't live without Google. I can't live without Google. As long as you've got that, you don't have to be concerned about the short-term earnings miss or earnings beats. You don't have to be concerned about short-term cyclicality. You don't have to be concerned about loss. You don't have to be concerned, because companies, as long as they've got a strong moat that protects them against competition, you can be sure that over time, they're going to make more and more money, generate more and more free cash flow, and the intrinsic value is just going to keep going higher. And as long as the intrinsic value keeps going higher, the share price will keep going higher, all right? And every time the price drops because of short-term bad news, it's an opportunity to buy the effing dip, okay? So again, take a look at Alphabet. I've shown this chart a couple of times. And look at all the so-called bad news that the media uses to spook people. That, you know, in early 2023, Google shares dropped 100 billion market cap after its new chatbot made a mistake, right? Ah, you know, and then Google Cloud revenue profit misses estimates. Ah, right? Dow tumbles 475 points. S&P 500 suffers the worst day as inflation wars erupt. Oh my God, I'm going to die. Google loses the fight against 2.7 billion EU antitrust fight. We're going to die. Google faces US government attempt to break it. We're going to die. Every time people panic, that's when you buy the effing dip, buy the effing dip, buy the effing dip, buy the effing dip. Just keep buying the effing dip. And you're going to do really well. It's so simple. And simply by just buying the dip on great companies with wide moats, that's how you generate huge returns. All right. So across my two portfolios, you can see that over here, you know, Alphabet is up 170,000 in profits. And over here, it's up 148,000 in profits. So total is about 318,000 in profits. And my average cost for Alphabet is about, over here, it's about 87. It's about $87 average cost over here. And here, my average cost is about $111. And as it keeps going, I keep buying more, right? I'm okay to keep buying more at a higher price. I keep averaging up as long as when I buy, it's undervalued, below the intrinsic value, and it has retraced to a support level. Okay, so right now, with this good news, would I buy more Google right now? No, I won't. Why? Okay, because right now is no longer that undervalued. Okay, so for example, if you take a look at the intrinsic value of Google, you can see that it's $208. And right now the share price is 211, and today's going to get up to maybe 220. So it's going to be slightly overvalued, right? Now remember that over time, the intrinsic value will go up, right? The intrinsic value will go up over time, but for now, you can see that the intrinsic value being there and the share price going above the intrinsic value is a time when I won't add, right? I won't sell, but I won't add either, you know? And like I told you, the most important thing is that when a company has got a wide moat, when it's got a wide moat, I'm never concerned about short-term bad news. I'm never concerned about short-term problems, because with a wide moat, they are able to defend themselves against competition and keep growing. But when a company has got no moat or a weak moat, then it's dangerous, because you know, one bad news can crack the company like an egg. And if we take a look at the charts, for example, it's the same thing. You know, I keep telling people that the time to buy is not when the price has already gone up. Don't chase the girl, you know, wait for the girl to fall into your arms. So if we look at the chart on Google, for example, and you take the, well, let's take a look at a daily chart over here, right? And again, you can see, you know, over here, hold on, just give me this drawing tool over here, right? So you've got a wave up, wave down, 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 wave up, wave down. And right now, today is going to be waving up. Yeah. So you never want to chase after a wave up. You want to wait for the next wave down to a support level. Wait for it to drop to a support level. And below the intrinsic value, that's where I will, you know, add more to build my position, right? So over the years, I've been buying more Google at a higher price, but only after it drops to a support level when it's undervalued, yeah? So what other stocks are there? You know, some people say, but Adam, right now the market's at an all-time high, near an all-time high. What the hell is there to buy? There are many companies to buy. Like in my last video, I shared that within this market, there are still great companies that are undervalued. You just have to look for them. And I'm going to share with you a couple more today, right? One of them is a monopoly within the photolithographic segment of the semiconductor manufacturing industry, okay? To make wafers, to make semiconductor, for, you know, companies like TSM to make these wafers, they have to use the machines by ASML. And again, disclaimer, I already have a fairly big position in ASML, but I always like to buy more if I get a good price. So if you look at ASML, for example, it's still undervalued. You can see that the intrinsic value is $948. And right now it's selling $725. It's a wide moat company. So very, very strong moat, and it's undervalued. And if you look at the financials, they look solid, right? Predictability, high profitability, high growth, medium, very strong moat, very strong financial balance sheet, and valuation, very, very attractive. If you take a closer look at the moat over here, how strong is the moat? Again, to me, the moat is the most important thing. It's 9 out of 10 score. Do you know how many companies have a 9 out of 10 score? Very few companies. Okay, so this is one of the most dominant companies in the entire world, ASML. So if you take a look at the share price, again, let's punch in ASML. Looks a bit messy. Okay, let's do that, right? So again, you can see it's been actually consolidating at this level, right? We had a big, we had this big wave here, down wave, up wave, down wave, up wave, down wave. Now it's like consolidating, right? And the latest intrinsic value was what again? 948, right? So 948 somewhere there. 948, yeah, that's the intrinsic value there, right? So again, you have got a great company and you can see that generally it's on an uptrend, but short term it's consolidating, it's undervalued. So these are the kind of companies that I like to add. Again, let me make it very, very clear. These are long-term investments. These are not short-term trades. These are companies I like to hold for the long term and let it compound my wealth over time. Another company that is undervalued right now is actually Fortinet. So Fortinet is one of the top cybersecurity companies. Next to Palo Alto, Fortinet and CrowdStrike, they monopolize the cybersecurity market. And if you look at Fortinet recently, after their earnings report, they drop to their moving average. You can see a very strong support at the 200 moving average. Can you see that? Very strong support, wave up, wave down, wave up, wave down, wave up. And it recently hit it over here. So this is a pretty strong support. And again, there's no guarantees. It could go lower. I'm not saying it can't go lower, but the probability is that this looks like a pretty good bottom for it to rebound back up. But again, we don't just buy just on the charts. You have to look at the fundamentals. Is this a great business? And does it have a strong moat? And is it undervalued? All right. So again, in the old days, I spent hours and hours looking at the financial statements, reading all the reports, and now, with Stock Oracle, it's like really simple. So let's punch it in to Fortinet. And you can see the intrinsic value is 88.70. So currently it's undervalued. It's got a wide moat, okay? And it's, highly predictable, highly profitable, medium growth, strong moat, strong balance sheet, strong valuation. At one glance, you can see, is it a great company or is it a crap company, right? Really, really simple. So let me share with you another one, which I have been buying a lot of, in fact, early this year, and now it's begun to rebound. And that's Celsius. I think I've talked about Celsius quite a few times, right? It's not the first time. So I currently have Celsius in the portfolio. You can see my average price is $37, and I'm up 64%. And some of my students say, well, we're up 64%, is it time to take profit? And to me, it's like, if you want to make millions of dollars in a market, you can't take profit at 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%, 100%, 200%. No, you have to, let it run, 3x, 5x, 10x. That's how you make the big money. Like what Charlie Munger says, the big money is not in buying and selling. It's in sitting on your ass and waiting. But the problem with most people is that they're so impatient, they don't have the patience to wait for those huge returns in the market. What's the potential of Celsius? Is there still a long runway ahead, or is it kind of like at the top? Well, we have to look at both the fundamentals and the technicals. So starting with the fundamentals, let's look at Celsius, for example. So based after their last earnings report, the latest intrinsic value is $90.37. So currently at the share price of $61.41, even though I'm already up over 60% on my position, but it's still quite undervalued. It's still quite a ways to go to its intrinsic value. And not only that, but if you look at the bigger picture, okay? So for example, who are their competitors? So their competitors are other energy drink manufacturers, right? So the market leader is Red Bull. And then you've got Monster, and then you've got Celsius. Now, Celsius owns the Celsius brand and Alani Nu, and they just acquired Rockstar from Pepsi. And what you notice is a few things. Number one, so Red Bull is the market leader. They are in blue, and you can see that Red Bull has been kind of like losing market share a bit over here. And in fact, over the longer run, they are losing market share. Monster in green, also losing market share. And who's gaining the market share? That's right, Celsius. Celsius is gaining market share from Red Bull as well as Monster. Now, currently, Monster... Now, of course, let's look at Monster right now. Monster is the next competitor that Celsius is aiming to overtake. Monster is currently in 140 countries. And about 40% of their sales is outside the US. Celsius, on the other hand, is a pretty new company. And right now, they are only, besides the US, they are only in 7 other countries. 7 plus or minus a few. And their international market only represents 3% of their business. So in other words, they are only starting their international expansion. So I think there's huge potential as they expand outside of the United States. Okay. Now, currently, Monster is about a $61 billion market cap. Market value, $61 billion. Okay. And Celsius market cap is roughly about $15 billion. So, if Celsius can reach Monster's market cap, which I think is very possible, then Celsius is about a 3x to 4x from current levels. But even if they can't reach Monster's value, even if they get half of Monster's business, which I think is very possible, that's still $15 billion to $30 billion, that's still a 2x opportunity from current levels. However, be aware that unlike Monster or Fortinet or Google, Celsius is still a relatively young company. So it doesn't have a wide moat yet, okay? In my opinion and my team's opinion and Stock Oracle's opinion, it's got what we call a narrow moat, right? Not a wide moat, a narrow moat, but it still has a moat based on its brand Celsius. It's actually very popular with the young generation, and Alani Nu, that's also very popular, okay? Now, some of you would use the AI moat analysis over here. And if you click on AI moat, now this moat is analyzed by AI, which is actually the back end is basically using ChatGPT. Now, if you click on this, you'll say that, oh, Celsius has no moat and it's got a 4 out of 10 score. And you may see that, well, Stock Oracle says it's a narrow moat. So who do I listen to, right? So the answer is, if I were you, and you see a difference between the Oracle moat and the AI moat, if I were you, I would listen to the Oracle moat, okay? Because the AI moat is basically based on AI, it's on algorithm, whereas Oracle moat, it's the discretionary research of my team, okay? So for me, I take it as a narrow moat company. Now again, because it's still a relatively new company, you would notice that the financial statements are not yet having that solid track record. You know, usually when I buy a company, I want to make sure it's got a 5-year track record of revenue, profit, cash flow growth. But if you look at Celsius, because it's a new company, you know, the revenue has been growing, yes, but the income, the profits are not yet consistent. Okay, not yet consistent. Whereas, however, the free cash flow has already been relatively consistent. So this is what I call a speculative growth company. It is not mature, it is speculative. So as a result, I don't usually buy that big a position. I will usually take a smaller position and let it grow from there, okay? And of course, there's no guarantee. Some of these small companies may not work out, you know? But most of the time, the ones I buy, they tend to work out. So I bought Palantir, which was a very young company when I bought it at $9 a share. That's worked out really well. And we'll see if Celsius can also work out just as well, okay? So share with you some of my thoughts on the market. Hope it's been useful. And again, there are great bargains out there. Just gotta look very carefully, and a lot of money to be made in today's markets. Thank you, and may the markets be with you. If you wanna catch my latest videos, click on the subscribe button right now. Click on the bell so you get instant notifications once I upload my latest video. If you wanna check out my online courses, go to piranhaprofits.com. We're going to learn how to invest and how to trade the financial markets and create an income from all around the world. If you want to join my live Wealth Academy program, go on to wealthacademyglobal.com and find out more about how you can learn investing and trading live online. This is Adam Khoo, and may the markets be with you.